standing strong while I'm going and I'm striving. I'm relying on myself for as long as I'm surviving. Taking no excuses because your words are just useless. Kick off the dust and let's do this.
Today, we are going to talk about social media influence. I think, obviously, with the state of affairs going on around the country and the world, it's super important to realize what social media is doing to us, the control it has over us, and really how it's making us feel on a daily basis, sometimes without even knowing it. So that's the theme for today. Corey, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's never been more prevalent. I think one of the things that we're going to talk a little bit later is some awesome, I don't know if I want to call them documentaries, but films that are put together that have a lot of fact-based information within them that discuss, you know, trends and data points that have how the advent of social media, things like Facebook and whatnot, you know, since 2010 have really affected society in both a positive and negative way. And I don't think it's ever been as a divisive time. And I don't think as many people have ever been on social media as they are now. Right. Yeah. And I think it's an issue that a lot of people are trying to figure out how to navigate. I know I'm one of those people, not always being aware of the toll or the time invested in social media and how that can adversely affect my life. So I think it's a great talking point. I think hopefully we'll share some information and insights that will spark some additional thoughts within our listeners and, hopefully help people find the motivation to seek a better way of navigating social media for themselves.
A healthier relationship, I think, is what we're looking at. It's not that something that's going to go away. It's not something that I think most of us feel we could completely cut out of our lives, as noble as that sounds. I think having a healthier relationship with social media is what's key. As everything we're going to talk about on this podcast, food, working out, relationships, having a healthier relationship with yourself, with pizza, with social media and Facebook, I think it's all just vital in navigating today's super modern world. I always think it's really interesting when every generation talks about, you know, in my day, we didn't have this. And I'm sure since the dawn of time, the first person that read a newspaper off the printing press was like, here we go. There goes the world. They're just printing up newspapers right and left. And I know when radio came out, people were probably bitching about as much time as people sat and listened to the commercials in radio and stuff, TV, video games, all of that. But what I really have to acknowledge, and the reason I'm saying that is I watch my daughter, who's 19, navigate being raised in a social media environment. And your son, who's 10 now?
11.
Yeah. 11. He's going, these children are raised never knowing what it's like to not have social media in their life. And one of the things I think Corey and I are going to talk about a bunch is the two documentaries that he talked about, The Social Dilemma and that The Great Hack.
Correct.
And how much more interactive these are than simply a media platform to sell you stuff. So if you look at radio, if you look at magazines, if you look at television, if you look at billboards, if you look at any other form of advertising, you can easily choose to opt out, you know, when TV, well, we all got TiVo and we blasted past commercials, but it's simply holding your attention for enough time to hopefully influence some buying stuff. And all of those forms of media were meant to try to sell you something in the limited bandwidth that they had to do that. Social media is different. What you are is the commodity. They're not trying to sell you stuff. They are to some extent, but they're actually taking you and marketing you to all the people that want to sell you stuff. Much different profile, much different user experience. And that's now we're all part of an experiment that the people that are running the experiment don't even know. They don't even have a hypothesis of how this will go. You know, like in science, if you're going to run an experiment, you said, my hypothesis is that, like, if I do this to this little rat, it's going to do X, Y, and Z. And then you spend time proving or disproving your theory. We're all being experimented on with no regard to what it could do to us and what it's doing to the children that are being raised in this saturated environment of information specifically designed to change the way that you are.
No, absolutely. I think, and that's just a capitalistic take on it, right? I mean, that's the for-profit side of social media, but also you have, you know, people, I think, this is just my opinion, right? But I think a lot of people value their online presence more so than how people actually view them in life.
Oh, 100%.
Right. And so,
because it's more easy to manipulate.
Well, yeah, you want to curate this experience, right? You know, I know that I didn't think that I was doing it intentionally, but I would definitely curate specific moments in my life and share that with people because I wanted them to see the upside. Mm-hmm. But they never got to really see the day-to-day side of things because who wants to look at that, right? Like,
right.
Unless you're one of those people that just post on social media all day, every day, you know, that, hey, I bought this, I'm doing this, I got this going on. Hey, look at this fucking new widget, right?
We all make fun of those people. and yet we are to some extent as well.
No, absolutely, yeah. Hey, look at my new bike parts, right? Yeah.
you shut your mouth.
But yeah, I mean, to your point, right? It's, and I think one of the things that's been really interesting is having these congressional hearings and having the heads of these social media companies, because I'm not going to say they're being held accountable because they're not.
No.
Right? But the idea that they're complicit in the things that are happening with how their platforms are being used, mm-hmm. and talking about the experiments that are taking place, right? I mean, if I had to guess, and there's tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of micro experiments that are taking place, and who's liable for the adverse effects of those things, right? And I think that these documentaries do a really great job of highlighting that they're operating as private entities, but they have the greatest influence ever exists in the world.
Yes.
You know,
well, like any other form of media, TV is regulated by the FCC, what you can, the FCC. Yeah. Yeah. What you can and can't put on there, you know, and this is basically unregulated, not just what they can put on there, but what they can do to you to manipulate you to engage in these platforms. And I think it's super important right up front to talk about, like, the theme for today is we're not just here to say like social media is bad, block it. That would be like bury your head in the sand and hope that, you know, that we all go back to riding horses because the car is going to ruin the world. That's not realistic. So what we're saying is, how can we have a conversation about how to navigate successfully using social media? Because there are a lot of good things about social media. It brings people together. I mean, hell, it's brought us together in some fashion, you know, like you can expand your social network and you can find those tribes that we're all seeking to become part of. You can actually build tribes within that and use it to further your actual human interactions and in a lot of good stuff. I look at some of the amazing creative stuff that is going on the internet and go like, that stuff wouldn't exist in a different form. So it has a lot of potential. But I think what we all need to be cautious with is how to balance that with the negatives. And so we just don't want to focus on the negatives today. We can focus on some of the positives, but the positives are there and you have to weigh out what those extreme negatives are. Because I think kind of as we've laid out here, unlike any form of marketing in history, there are some negative, like actual physiological effects that we're experiencing that we all need to be aware of. So we can make better choices with that.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think social media is great, but I think you can look at it as compared to a tool, right?
I mean, like my favorite band tool or like a hand tool?
No, like a hand tool, like a hammer, right? A hammer is very useful for something that's fairly specific. But if you use it in an unintended way, like you can hurt yourself with it, right?
Yeah.
And then if you're not aware that you're hurting yourself with that tool, you can continue to do potentially serious damage, right? And so I think the overarching goal of this conversation is to create awareness and have a mindfulness of the fact that these platforms, while have great ability to add value and purpose to our lives, the other side of it is these aren't free services. And you have to be mindful of the fact that they are intentionally manipulating you. It's what takes place in business. They have an end goal. The goal is for them to be able to sell ad revenue to them. And that's obviously why your feeds are inundated with ads. That's why, you know, behavioral patterns and things. I mean, even Amazon wanted to start shipping products to people's houses before they order them because they were so confident in their ability to predict what your behavior was.
Yeah.
And it's just insane because we are creating so much information through our daily interactions with our cell phones and things like that. You know, they talk about like phantom vibrations. You know, I don't know if you ever had this experience, but where you think your phone vibrated in your pocket, mm-hmm. but it didn't. Your phone's not even in your pocket, mm-hmm. but you're like, oh, like what's that, right? Mm-hmm. Your brain is so used to getting that notification, that alert to, hey, you need to pay attention to this thing.
Right.
You know, and in a way, you subconsciously become enslaved to it, right?
Right.
And then as you feed into these social media platforms, for the most part, whether it's YouTube, Snapchat, TikTok, things like that, you are giving time, effort, and energy, and you're being, a narrative is being promoted to you, right? It could be your friends list or what have you like that, but then your friends are also telling you a story about their life and where they're at. And it can be framed in a very positive way, or it can be very harsh and very negative. And so how do you respond to that, you know, and not being able to make a fully formed opinion off a snippet of information mm-hmm. is very difficult, you know, especially with how divisive things have become with COVID and the, whether you should wear a mask, whether you shouldn't wear a mask, whether this is a hoax, whether it's real. You know, to the political unrest that's existing, right? That you're being bombarded with information. You're being overloaded. And I know for myself, you know, I fell into a pretty deep rut for about 3 weeks and just, you know, not being motivated, not happy. And it took me a while to really sit down and think about, why am I feeling this way? And it's difficult to work through those thoughts and to kind of segregate things and analyze what it was, but it was just, I was being overwhelmed with very strong, defined opinions, whether I agreed or disagreed with them. It was just so much. It doesn't happen in a conversation. Like, you don't bump into one of your friends and, by the way, like, here's all my hardest takes on, you know, what we should do with COVID or what should happen with politics and things like that. It's, you have a conversation. Hey, how are you doing? Right. You may build up to talking about some of those complicated topics, but you don't just start in the middle at the most, you know, heated tipping point of that. You know, on top of having something it's literally trying to elicit your attention, right? I mean, the whole end goal is to increase your amount of screen time, you know? And so when you start saying yes to social media, you're saying no to other aspects of your life, and then you start falling behind in other responsibilities and things that you need to do. And those issues can compound themselves quickly, you know? And for
so
me,
I think it's super important to inject right there for people that haven't watched The Social Dilemma or The Great Hack. What we're talking about here is the fact that the things that are happening to you physiologically, they're not by accident. These companies are very aware of what they're doing, and they're very aware of how to manipulate you back in. It was laid out very clearly in The Social Dilemma, how they're able to control you. They know what to show you. They know, like, one of the scenes was this kid hasn't picked up his phone for a while because he's like excited about a person in person, and then is ignoring it. And they have this little setup where the, you know, human little androids in the thing are like trying to spam him, and it's not working. And then all of a sudden they're like, hit him with his ex-girlfriend's, like, in a new relationship, you know? And you're like, damn, bing, you get that notification. They know how to draw. They know how to draw you back in because they're paying attention to how little or much you are engaging with their platform. And if they see your numbers drop off the baseline that you set for yourself, they're very aware of it. I'm on a journey to try to decrease my screen time, so I'm using the features built into the iPhone, and yet that feature to tell me what my screen usage is being combated by all of the media going, go fuck your iPhone. We're going to, like, bam, 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 bam. We know how to get you to reset your time limit every day, hit your 15-minute extension. So they're very, very crafty. And I think it's super important. What we're talking about is some of the concerns with social media. We're going to balance that, obviously, with what healthy use of social media it is. But right now we're laying out, these are the concerns. We're not just simply watching advertising anymore. Kind of like I talked about earlier, where it's, I'm not flipping open a magazine or a newspaper and I'm looking at a one-page ad for a car dealership or something like that. Or I drive by a billboard on the side of the road and that's giving us information. Or I'm sitting on TV and they're trying to sell me the ShamWow and I just keep flipping around. This is different. When you disengage from your TV, other than them probably like Nielsen ratings in some form way back in the day of how much TV you watched, they didn't know how to get you back to that TV. Because if you shut it off, it's off. It's just done. But these companies now have figured out you're carrying a device on you and we have addicted you to it. We have literally physically and mentally addicted you to the need to interact with this device. And now that we have you good and hooked, what are we going to pump into your eyes? Lots of it. Some of it's a marketing aspect. Some of it's a lifestyle comparison aspect where these platforms are just allowing people to put out the fakeness of a life. Like we're all curating something to put on the internet, our best versions of ourselves. And some people are taking that to the extreme and they're allowing people like my daughter and your son at very young ages to believe that this is reality, that all girls are that skinny, that all girls can dance that good, that all girls have that long of hair, that all girls wake up looking that way. Cause they're literally making TikToks of like, I roll over and I look beautiful and pristine. And so that those people are creating a reality that also engage you in that. And so there's some very powerful things that are going on psychologically to where, why is it that when you put your phone away or for anybody that's listening right now, think about the time where you drove away from your house and you didn't have your phone on you. Or if that frightens you so much that you make sure that never happens. But when it has happened to you, how do you feel? Probably worse than if like, you left anything else behind, maybe even your children. I mean, that would be frightening from one aspect, but think of the sheer terror you go about. Or if I told you, hey, what would it be like for you to go on a retreat, go move to a place for a week where there's no Wi-Fi or cellular signal, and you cannot interact with that phone at all. You read books, but there's no cable, there's no nothing. Think about that. Like honestly, put yourself on that mental journey of what does that make you feel like? Probably the most anxious you could feel about anything. And that's a real freaking problem.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're physically going through withdrawal. You're not getting that dopamine, yep. You know, dump that you would get through a like or a comment or some type of positive reinforcement that takes place through social media. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, social media, like we talked about in the beginning, it's a tool and it's dependent upon how you want to use that tool. But I mean, it's great, right? If you look at some of the personal projects you've been able to work on, you are leveraging an awesome community within the mountain biking community to be able to gain and propagate resources to be able to help people that are potentially, disenfranchised or economically challenged, but, reducing the barrier of entry into the hobby and things like that. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it's a huge positive for it. Right.
One of the things that we did with MTB NorCal was you simply just made a shirt to do fundraising for the victims of the Santa Cruz fire. And we raised $1,700 off of a community that wanted to support that effort. That's the good side of it. That's amazing to do that. But at what cost to me and the other guys involved in that project, because we had to spend a lot of time on our phones and we got sucked back into the very thing that I'm trying to limit myself and make a healthy limitation on and a healthy balance of now I'm back in it because I'm using it for the good. It's the good versus the evil conversation.
I think it's really interesting because, after watching the Social Dilemma, it challenged me to be more mindful of my interaction with technology as a whole, not just social media. Right. And my wife's bipolar and she has a few medical conditions and she's been able to find Facebook groups and to be able to talk and network with people that she wouldn't normally run into in her day-to-day interactions, especially with her conditions.
Sure.
And she's been able to befriend these people and, have really positive experiences and kind of identify within this group. And there's been nothing but upside for her in that situation. But then I made the mistake of showing her Instagram reels. And now it's just, she's constantly over there, watching these most random videos over and over again. And I'm guilty of it, right?
Sure. Some of them are quite funny.
No. Some of them were great. Yep. Some of them were pretty ridiculous. But the thing was, and what they talk about in the social dilemma is, it's how would that the way they designed the social media feed to refresh, for you to pull it down, right?
Yeah.
And to actually, function physically and mentally like a slot machine.
Yes.
Pull the handle. And it's just like, hey, you don't know what you're going to get, right? But you're always waiting for that next thing. Oh, if I pull down one more time, I'm going to get something better, right? Mm-hmm. And the more we interact with these things, the better they get at being able to predict what it is that's going to capture our engagement. Mm-hmm. And in turn, on a subconscious level, we can easily become enslaved to these, whether it's a software or a hardware feature, right? And we keep going back to those things. And, it's especially with COVID, the increase of of suicides and depression and things that are taking place unilaterally, especially within kids.
Right.
You know, and you compound that with, you know, now the only relationship that these, a lot of these kids have is an online relationship, you know? And so now they don't want to be made fun of, right? I mean, we all remember what it was like to be a kid. You right. got picked on, you know, any form of weakness or insecurity that you showed, like they would apply so much pressure to, right?
Yeah.
They were fucking like mental terrorists or little ninjas where it's just like, oh, I think there's a, I think you might be insecure about this. Let me just poke over here. Right. And, oh yeah. You respond.
Sure.
And then they just drill down on that. Right. And next thing you know, you feel like shit and you just want to get away from everyone. Mm-hmm. And that feeling's unique to you because no one else gets picked on that way. Right.
Right.
And you can quickly fall into a pretty dark place. And so I'm constantly having to have conversations with my son about the quality of his relationships. While, you know, we would talk about having healthy boundaries with friends and, you know, don't let anyone hit you, things like that, you know, put hands on you. Now it's, if they talk to you in a certain way, if they're, you know, if they're going beyond, like, you know, just giving you a hard time, you know, and they're constantly, you know, mentally terrorizing you, it's, you have to develop these boundaries. And it's complicated because there's no direct correlation to the interaction that you're having, right? It's not like you can't just walk away from that person.
Right.
Because you'll get a notification on your phone and 5 minutes later, oh, so-and-so commented on your picture or they sent you a message saying this. Right. Like in the curiosity, right? You're so addicted to going back and looking at that information. It's like, it could be good information. It could be like, hey, awesome news. I just got a job or, you know, moving back and we can be able to hang out and go mountain biking. We can do whatever, right? Mm-hmm. You don't know, but you're always curious about what that piece of information is. So you go back to it.
Yeah.
And being able to understand that the difficulty in not going back to that information and setting the phone aside for a longer extended period of time isn't necessarily your fault, right? Because right. of the fact that they're engineering, you know, all this AI machine learning and marketing strategies to get you to go back to the phone.
Sure.
Know? And again, you know, they did a really good job illustrating it with how they notify the kid that his ex-girlfriend was in a new relationship, mm-hmm. right? Hey, I have to know, like, the curiosity, like, this is really going to elicit this response. And then now, you drop back in. It's kind of like a cheat day on a diet.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, I can handle it. I've been on my diet for 2 weeks. Let me go get that cheeseburger. And you're like, oh, this cheeseburger tastes so much better than the steamed broccoli and chicken I've been eating for a week.
It's fishing with you keep using better bait. If you can't get the fish to bite, you keep looking, and then suddenly, boom, you got one on the hook. You're like, damn, that's the thing. Live minnows are the one. But these companies have specialists that are creating programs. And the frightening problem with it is they're creating programs that are not binary. They don't just work simply by doing this. Marketing, in my opinion, leading up to social media was so much rudimentary and binary, where I have to create ads that engage people, but it's just a simple two-way transaction. We create an ad that is so transformative, you know, something like a Just Do It campaign, Michael Jordan, like you get a polarizing figure, you do something that's visually stunning and creative. We show it to the masses. And what is our conversion on it? Somebody looks at it, they digest it, and they purchase based on that. And they can kind of correlate that stuff. What they're doing now for marketing that's not what's happening. They're creating smart systems that are learning faster than what we know they're doing. And if you ask these people, how are they doing? How is this occurring? They can't tell you because the machine's going, I've done it myself. This artificial intelligence has now learned what Corey likes. Like thousands of data points. I think in the Great Hack, they're saying they had like 100,000 data points on every person, or 5,000 data points on every on enough people to then go, we know how to target. We know how to show you an ad that is different. Like if you make a billboard, every person that goes by on the highway looks at that billboard and has their own experience with it. But imagine you driving along and every person that passes that billboard gets a different message, specifically tuned to what you like. Because they know it. I think one of the big things in the Great Hack that I still fight against, because I still believe the damn phone's listening to me, and somebody's gonna have to prove me wrong. But you get those ads that pop up, and you swear that phone, you listen to me on the microphone, and that's why you're showing me an extremely specific thing. I had one instance in an REI. I never took my phone out of my pocket. I didn't Google anything. We didn't look at anything. But by the time I got home, it showed me an ad for Smartwool. That's an extremely like, it wasn't like, oh, hey, ski jackets, because you happen to be in REI. It like probably knew where I was in REI. It could be that specific that they know, like it knew enough to know what I was looking at while I was in there. And it's not happenstance. I believe it's spying on you, but they're saying it's not. But it is so specific in its knowledge of you as an individual consumer that it will give you what you want. And so what more powerful marketing than like showing you what you want? To the point of what you're saying, Amazon is so comfortable in your habits and who you are as a person. I'm going to send this out to your house because I know you're going to need more of it, or I know you're going to want it. And you, the chances are like the how they're hedging their bets is by the time it gets to you, you're not going to send it back because you're like, oh, well, and who knew I needed the like ShamWow 3000 this time? You know, like that is the drastic nature of social media. So you have this like two competing worlds of social media. You have the social experiment that we're all going through of having platforms for people to put their curated thing and an ad as a comparison. And do I get enough likes? Am I validated? Is my content good enough to stand up against this other person? If I'm a creator, is my stuff, why is this person getting multiple views? Why is their channel at 10,000 subscribers and I got 5? That's the comparison. That's a whole entity that would take lifetimes to study just in and of itself, that social experiment that we've all been kind of drug along when we look at ads and magazine ads and how those things are going. But this is much different now. This is a user-based experience where they're putting it out there and allowing people to like determine their experiment or experience level with it. On the other side, then it goes, now that I got you good and hooked on this platform that you're doing all these things over here, let me sell you a bunch of shit too while I'm in here. Let me just like bombard you with stuff. You ever like look at one thing and all of a sudden you get like for days, are you looking at bike seats? Let me show you every bike seat on the planet by every manufacturer that chose to opt into this thing. And you're just, now that we're all savvy to it, we're like, dude, come on. Like, can you have some decorum with this? Like, please.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because it's not just happening on the consumer level. It's also happening on the business side of things. Funny enough, I was having a conversation with my friend Jordan, and I won't name his company, but he's a director of sales for a company that specializes in online marketing for various trade groups. And they handled all their publications within these trade groups. And so what they do is they reach out to partnering companies that, hey, you sell these products to, we'll use orthodontists as an example. Like, hey, like you sell products to orthodontists. Well, I control the marketing online presence for all the orthodontists associations. So if you'd like, I can help connect the dots because I know who your customer is. I have all their online presence over here. I can help you market to them better, right? And they, you know, we were talking about it, and he's like, yeah, he's like, we have strategies so that I know how I can identify someone that is an orthodontist on the internet based off, we have profiles that this is how an orthodontist uses the internet. Mm-hmm. Right. And so we can target market them directly. And it's so interesting because it's not just, hey, this is a middle-aged guy that lives in this area that's expressed an interest in, we'll use mountain biking as an example, but it's, you are using it as this type of professional. And so you don't, yeah, while he has a personal persona online, mm-hmm. he also has a professional, right? And so you are being inundated front to back every day, all day, every day. And now you have, you know, I mean, we look at the loss of viewership and things like that and sports and entertainment and conventional like cable news, things like that. And so they're trying even harder to regain some of that viewership, you know? And so they're going over the top and the headlines are that much more drastic and crazy because they're just trying to rope in anything they can do to capture your engagement. And so you have tens of thousands of entities that are constantly bidding for your attention. And a lot of it is soliciting you in a subconscious emotional way and trying to invoke a specific response. And you can't help but follow suit, you know, because you don't realize that, I mean, you're being manipulated.
Right.
And in turn, you land in this place. And if that's happening, how difficult or how big of a stretch is it for you to end up in an emotional state that was unintended,
yeah.
positive or negative? Right. And they're both important. You know, it's like, it can't just be a happy accident. You know, that's the upside of the situation. But what if you fall into
that's a Bob Ross, a happy accident.
Oh yeah.
Just, I love you know, it. You just threw Bob Ross. Yeah. There's no mistakes, they're just happy accidents.
Yep, exactly. But then you can end up in a place that you didn't necessarily want to be. And I can't remember, they talked about it in the movie, but there was that NBA player that all of a sudden he thought that the earth was flat. Right. Because he went down through the YouTube recommendation.
Yeah.
Right. And then
yeah.
Next thing you know, he's just like, there was so much good information. And so these algorithms, they're not just promoting good information. Right. Because now, I mean, how many times do you see it where it's all like, oh, you know, fact checkers have deemed this information to be false and whatnot. Right. And it's like,
but who's a fact checker?
Who's the authority? Right.
Yeah.
You know, and there's so many things. Like I have a lot of friends that stream video games online and have some pretty big platforms.
Yeah.
You know? A couple of them are upwards over 100,000 subscribers. Dang. And their channels are being flagged and things. And they're constantly having to combat it with YouTube because their algorithm's saying, oh, we demonetized your channel for this or what have you, or we flagged you. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no one, like there's so much stuff that's happening. There's no way that a human being can sit there and make an informed decision and recommendation based off it.
Right.
And so even if it's bad information, the algorithm saying, oh, well, this guy is interested in it. Let me serve him up some more. And then, you know, it's a snowball effect. Right. And then next thing you know, you're being overwhelmed with all this completely provably inaccurate information.
Right.
But it feels so real because that's the reality that's being fed to you.
Right.
And it's selling you a narrative, good or bad. And they're not considering the fact that some people aren't necessarily equipped or aware enough to be able to make their own decisions about how they're going to respond to this information.
Right. Depending on age as well, too. So I would also go back to historically, we have a volume of information coming at us now that there is no possible way to determine if any of it is valid or true. And I use that with huge air quotes because what is true? If you ever want to look it up, Jordan Peterson goes through like about 2-hour discussion with a guy on the word true. It's incredibly enlightening if you ever want to listen to it. But what is true? Before, when we had very few streams of information, we had news, whether it was print or TV or radio to some extent, you had very few streams of information. And so if NBC Nightly News put something out as this is the news, well, there's only like 3 other competing news things at night. And those people would go like, that's bullshit. That's not even news. We can prove that wrong. But now you have millions of information sources that are all competing for your attention and your clickbait and your clicks and likes and engagement and stuff. And so they're just putting stuff out there. They're putting stuff out there without a care as to whether they're accurate, whether it's responsible, whether it's ethical. And then on top of that, now you have a whole subset of, again, huge air quotes on a radio vocal only platform. But you have what people are now subject matter experts that don't have a fucking ounce of actual credibility. And I can speak to this because my daughter sent me one. She's a young gal. She deals with, you know, seasonal depression and all the stuff that goes on as you're young. Well, even old, you know, we all deal with it. She sent me something that a girl had put together on TikTok that was like, you know, the little thing that they're doing where they're dancing in front of their damn ring light and they're pointing and words pop up as such. And this young lady with not an ounce of formal schooling, nothing, probably got it from TikTok herself, is pointing to these things and saying, do you have this? Do you have this? And there's just a litany of things. I'd say they're like 10 to 12 things. If you have trouble sleeping, if you have like thoughts of like things that you're looking at going like, uh-huh, yeah, no, I got that. Yeah, I got that. And at the end, she goes, you could be autistic. Those are all signs of autism. And I'm autistic. And then I'm like, fuck me. Like my daughter just sent me things that she just got diagnosed by a TikTok creator that who is not autistic, that because if you have any of these things, which every damn human being has, because you're saying it in a void, you're saying it is that like you could have it. And you're like, oh damn, I do have that. Like if you ever Google WebMD, you know, we all have brain cancer immediately.
We're all gonna die, yeah.
Yeah, tomorrow, but like some disease that only 4 people in the world have. But now these people are putting it out there in the world without any validity. Because why are they doing that? Because it gets freaking views. Like that lady's TikTok thing got hundreds of thousands of views because of people like my daughter that went like, oh, Jesus, I'm autistic. Let me send this to Sally because I think she's autistic too, or could be, you know, and that's the danger that we're looking at. Like 30 years ago, you had to go to your doctor who knew you well. That was probably the person that like delivered you. You went to when you had a cold, you went to for your football physical. Like Dr. Rushford was our family doctor and he did it all. Like he delivered us all the way through everything, right? And you would go like, hey, doc, I think I might be autistic. and they'd run you through a litany of tests and you go, no, sorry, Ashley, you're not autistic. But TikTok says I am, man. Like yeah. That's what we're dealing with now. So you have this volume of information that has no possible way to be validated whatsoever. And there isn't any regulation, nor could you even possibly try to control that. Because again, what is factual anymore? What is real?
And it's funny you say that, right? Because now... They deplatformed the president, right? Mm-hmm. They're openly going out and censoring various groups.
Yeah.
Right. There's no side to be taken here, but they're censoring people, which I have a huge problem with.
And that's a topic we're going to handle on a podcast coming up soon. We actually have this as a topic is state of events right now, because we try to keep these to about an hour. And if we start talking about that, you're going to be about 6 hours into this. So, but sure, that did happen.
Right. And so you have the war of disinformation and fake news, uh-huh. right? And so now it's not even so much to just, hey, be mindful of how you're using these tools.
Right.
Right now. Other than the fact that they're trying to gain your attention, right. Now there's people they have an agenda.
Right.
Right. And so that's the much more cynical side of things that we can't ignore.
It's nefarious.
Right. You know, it's just, hey, we want to propagate this idea and mm-hmm. this is how we're going to do it. And they don't just come out and say it like, hey, you know, this is the side you should be on. It's mm-hmm. a bunch of micro interactions mm-hmm. that will end up leading to this place. And it's just all these little breadcrumbs. And
not to be offensive to any age group, but I will be 30 and under, I would say, would be the age that you're most susceptible to being swayed by that. Yeah. Again, because I have a 19-year-old daughter, I see this in kids up to about like 25-ish or so that are they believe it. Because again, if it's on the internet, it's true. We all joke about that. Well, it's on the internet. It must be true. But if you're my age, 46, we're like, yeah, they made a meme about it. It must be true. So we all know it's not. Although I have a hard time dissecting that. But there's things that are going on my daughter regularly tells me about because it's floating on the Snapchat and TikTok that she consumes as though it's real. And the one I throw out there is Pizzagate. I'm like, I don't even know what the hell you're talking about. So I had to look at it and stuff. And I'm telling you, like most of the, like her age range, whether they're for it against it, or like the whole deeper political side of it, they believe that as fact. And it's patently not like true in any real way. And I would also throw out there, there's probably some adults, probably a lot of adults out there that believe that stuff is true. You mentioned YouTube videos and going down these channels and believing that. I've had people that I know are high functioning, intelligent adults of middle age that have children and have really high end careers. And they ask me things because they've seen it on Facebook or somewhere in their little circles, you know, crazy Uncle Jimmy put it up there that 9/11 was fake. It was, you know, they rigged up, they blew up the buildings themselves. And they ask me that because they feel like somehow I'm a subject matter expert and blowing shit up. And like, do you think that could be true? Is there something to that whole building was rigged to blow up? And I'm just like, you actually think it's possible? Like there's a shred of you, like you said, the NBA player that started to believe the earth was flat because you consume enough plausible information that somehow they rigged the World Trade Centers to blow up. Like they flew jets into them, but those buildings couldn't crumble on their own. You put it out there, and you put it out there because you have a well-produced video, and that's the danger of these things. And we've all been victim to it. There was a big one coming around at the beginning of this COVID thing, a well-produced documentary, heavier quotes again, that swayed a lot of people to believe that this was all manufactured. And so now the divisiveness that is going on caused by these platforms, I think we're I think we're divisive by human nature. We move into camps, we move into tribal type stuff. That's who we are. But now it allows us to do it on so many levels. It used to be like, I like this football team and screw you, you like that football team. And they were like minor things. But now it's like any topic, like think of it, any topic, like 9/11 hoax versus not, anti-vaxxers, this, anti-maskers, after, like pick one. And, you know, like the Twisted Tea guy getting blasted in the head. People think that was legit. People think it's not, you know, like everything. We can take sides over every single thing.
Well, I think one of the things that people that were so focused on picking a side that not as many of us as should stop to think about, we don't have the information to have an informed opinion, right? And so for fear of picking the wrong team or not picking a team, we side with the most persuasive argument.
Emotional argument, yeah. Typically.
Yeah.
Well, not factual.
Right. Well, yeah, it's placating your emotions, right? And sure. So, you know, they target you in specific ways. And it goes back to those nefarious actors that are trying to undermine certain things. Mm-hmm. And if you have to have your guard up, you know, and that's the difficult part. And I think that the goal behind this podcast is to help create awareness in the fact that we need to take control of our actions and our participation within social media so that we can have the most positive, useful experience and not fall victim to, you know, all these, you know, corporate interests and, you know, other things that are taking place that are trying to persuade us to feel or act on certain things.
Yeah.
You know, we have to take personal responsibility for our online interactions.
Yeah. So I think we could beat this horse until it's just a pulp. So that's some of the negatives of it. So I think the next question that begs to be asked is, when does social media become an issue? When is all of these things we've laid out, we know what they're doing, we know why they're doing it, and when does it become an issue? When do you see yourself having a problem with social media?
I had a problem with social media.
And how did you know that? What did it look like and how did you know that this was a problem?
So in social media, it wasn't just social media, but it was a contributing factor to the fact that I was losing enthusiasm. I was losing motivation and I found myself, you know, I mean, classic, you know, like, just being tired, not having energy, mm-hmm. Way less positive than I normally would be, you know, struggling to get pretty benign tasks done that normally I could just be able to knock out.
Apathetic about life, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. For the most part. And I started finding myself kind of being not cynical, but just not interested and not engaged in the things that were happening around me. And it got to the point where I had to like stop and go, okay, why am I feeling this way? And, you know, the part of social media that fell into that was, you know, the kids call it IRL, in real life friends, right? Because you have to define now, is this an IRL? Like, yeah. Is this from when you actually know, or is this just
oh, yeah, because you're one of those goggle guys where you have a whole virtual reality with friends that walk around that aren't really there. Is that what you're talking about?
I mean, they don't. Yeah, I mean, yes and no.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to like criticize your online friends that you've made.
Oh, I'm not worried about
in
that.
In the Sims game.
No, definitely. Oh, man, that is not what it takes place, but it is funny. But just, you know, the fact that, you know, you see how people are portraying their life in a certain way and you know it not to be true. Yeah. And that's difficult to watch. You know, one of the best things ever for me was the Facebook memories.
Oh, yeah.
The amount of stupid, ridiculous, ignorant shit that I would post. Uh-huh. And over the years growing up, it becoming a little bit more mature than I was back then, I was just like, you're an idiot. Right? Like, why would you do that? So I've become very mindful of not posting things for fear of, was this a good idea in the moment? And then it was irresponsible or reckless, you know, after the fact. And so seeing how these people are portraying themselves online, knowing that the truth is something completely different,
sure,
I find difficult. And then when you try to have that conversation and it ends up becoming an argument because now you're challenging them to be honest with themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's only in for me, it was in their best interest and trying to help along a process that I've been finding myself go through. Mm-hmm. And to get pushback and to get the challenge. And it's like, wait a second, like if we can't agree that the sky is blue, then there's no real point in moving forward on other, you know, topics if we can't agree on the foundation of truth.
Right.
And, you know, and so that kind of just eroded some of my confidence in some of the relationships and things that I've had, on top of the fact that, you know, who was my best friend, you know, our interactions have been quite difficult for a number of years, and coming up to a point where it's just kind of like, you know, like dark side of the moon.
Yeah.
You know, I reached out probably like 20 times and I got 2 text messages. Oh, sorry, I'm busy working,
but
I know your day is off. I know what you're doing.
Sure.
I got the obligatory like Merry Christmas text.
Yeah.
And then that was it. And it's like, dude, I've literally spent hours every week, like countless hours, like 5-10 hours a week, doing everything I can to support you through these difficult times you're going through in your life for 6 years.
Right.
And then when I found myself like in a rough patch, however many times I reached out, nothing in return, was kind of, that was really frustrating. It was like, so then it was like, how am I going to respond to this? And then, so seeing this curated life that's being, you know, communicated, it's like,
sure,
you can't pick up the phone, but you can do these things.
Sure.
Like, and so it was just,
yeah,
it's a tangible manifestation of our relationship was not as important as being able to do these other things.
Sure.
And so for me, it was like, I can't feed into that. I can't be like, I don't want to challenge the status quo. If I'm like, well, if you're, you know, if you can do that, then you can do this. And basically you're picking that over our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ended up having to I just decided to get rid of Facebook off my phone and log out of on my computer. So it doesn't auto-populate in my tabs. It used to be like when my computer started up, boom, Facebook popping up. I'd see what's going on, send people some messages. It was, you know, a fun way to interact.
Sure.
But that was part of me pulling myself out of that hole,
right?
You know, and regaining some more self-control and awareness of how I was feeling. And so just trying to limit my interactions, because over the last year, I had tried so hard to unfollow certain pages, people that are really pushing political or like social issue topics and stuff like that on social media. Cause you can't have a meaningful conversation like that on the internet.
You know, well, I think there's a two-part component to that. You have to be really careful, because I consume a lot of that content too. And I have to be really careful of going, okay, well, I don't like what that person just said. I don't want to see it. And I don't want that negativity on my feed. But I have to be really careful to not just simply eliminate all those viewpoints from my life. And something we'll talk about again on a future show, where you get into a confirmation bias, echo chamber type thing, where now, because they're purposely giving you a feed that you already want to see, if you never have anybody else on there that has another viewpoint, because you've banned them or deleted them, now you have like a triple, well, it'd be double, I suppose, like confirmation bias. You're only consuming what Facebook or Instagram or whatever wants you to see, and you've only let people on your platform that have that anyway. So you could never get an alternate viewpoint, and you only can simply like double down on your own biases and stuff. I think for me, where I noticed it becoming unhealthy and where I struggle the most is like similar to what you're doing, but actually more direct, where I know I'm hiding within my phone on a daily basis, where I have things that I need to get done or things that I want to get done. My brain, the way that it works with some of the mental illnesses that I'm dealing with, it becomes overwhelmed and my brain just gets too overloaded. And a way to avoid that and numb myself is via social media. So I can scroll through Instagram and not have to tackle either personal development, relationship stuff, finances, anything in life. I can just numb myself with the Novocaine of Instagram, and to some extent Facebook and stuff too. But the Instagram is really geared towards that, and how its feed works a little bit differently than Facebook. And I think that for me was one of the huge issues where I realized I'm addicted to it. Like, I don't have an addictive personality in any other aspect. I don't drink to excess. I don't, never smoked. I like don't do drugs. I don't feel like I have an addictive personality, but this platform has come along at a period of my life where, as I deal with mental health struggles that I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, all these future podcasts that we really want to hook you into, we'll talk about a lot of that stuff, where this came along at a point in life that it gave me the soothingness to just shut my brain off and deal with this thing that is also at the very same time very damaging to me mentally. But I don't see those immediate effects. I just look at, I can waste extraordinary amounts of time, which then gets you into that super dark place of, well, I had 5 things on my list today to do. and I didn't get a damn thing done. But if I looked at my screen time for the day, I sure as shit spent a lot of time on Instagram or any of that stuff. It's the old, you know, people used to watch 10 hours of TV a day and stuff like that. And so now we've just replaced it with another thing. I think as humans, we're super prone to being like lazy, unproductive fucks sometimes because in modern society, you can get away with it. You know, like we're not out stacking wood for the winter and hoping we get the old hay like cut before it gets done for the cows. Like, I don't know. I talk like I lived on the frontier, but I watched one of those episodes of Alaska Wild or whatever the fuck it was. And it looks like they had hard lives up there. We don't have any of that shit. I don't have to prepare for the winter because I can still go down to Taco Bell and order whatever I want every night. So we have this lifestyle that is conducive to us being sedentary and wasteful of our time. And what we do know is that it's making us all feel sick because of that. And in my own personal estimation, the reason I feel sick at times with some of that stuff is a byproduct of the things I struggle with. This over here is making me unhealthy. So now that we know like what it looks like when we have an issue with social media, what's a healthy use of social media? What do you look at and go like, well, this is a healthy use of my time. This is how I can manage these platforms and do good with it.
For me, it's the business relationships, you know, the other than the ability to stay connected with people that no longer live locally, you know, and share memories and things that my son may do with family members and things like that. It's to promote and grow the business. You know, our goal with our business is to continue to grow so we can provide income and opportunities for employees, right? We want to scale and have the biggest influence that we can in creating opportunity for other people to succeed and accomplish their personal goals while driving a good wage. You know, and that's difficult here in California, but, you know, for people to be able to better their lives, you know, whether it's a short-term relationship with us or a long-term, you know, so understanding and how to optimize utilizing these social media tools that we're talking about and targeting customers, you know, for us, it's, you know, we're not trying to require their attention. We're trying to capture them at the right time where they're trying to make a decision to purchase a paint protection film product or commercial graphics for a building, things like that. You know, so we're not trying to enslave people into our business and you know, to identify, you know, with our company. But yeah, I mean, for me, that is really the only positive, healthy way that I found to this point that I can utilize social media.
What about on a personal level?
It's to just interact with people and to be able to, you know, look into, you know, it is curated to an extent, right? But to just look into the lives of my friends that, you know, that aren't local, you know, that are across the country and they're doing different things in their lives and, you know, to be able to kind of stay informed, you know, if we're not able to set aside, because it's hilarious that it's difficult to get a friend on the phone for 20 or 30 minutes or, you know, even up to an hour to have a conversation about what's going on. But I can easily burn an hour and a half scrolling through YouTube and Instagram reels.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard because it's just like, oh yeah, like we need to make time to have that conversation. Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't think we're cognitively aware of it. Right. And so that's the thing that I'm struggling with right now is how do I get the upside without the downside?
Yeah.
What about yourself?
That's a tough one. I mean, to answer that question, that's a tough one. That's like, you know, how do I use methamphetamine to stay up and be productive at night, but not get addicted? Yeah, not that I've ever used methamphetamine. Yeah. Yeah. How do I do it without taking apart my VCR and leaving it in the middle of my room? You know, this is problems. What, how do I play my VHS tapes if I don't have a VCR? Come on, man. You don't tell me you don't have the Little Mermaid on VHS. Really, honestly, I mean, I liken it to that. You're dancing with the devil. You know, you're trying to walk a line where, you're trying to use it for some healthy outlets and some healthy things while combating what we've just laid out in this entire podcast of these forces coming at you actively. Like it's not passive. It's active, sucking you in. So how do I do that? I think for me, healthy usage of social media is a couple things. Sure, it's keeping up with family that's not local and things like that. My mom's always surprised when she tries to tell me something like, oh, your cousin, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, I knew that like 3 days ago because she claims she's not on Facebook and yet she is. Really weird. She doesn't have a Facebook account. She logs into it and watches it, but refuses to be on Facebook, but yet knows everything on Facebook. Like, oh, I digress. I think it's great for that stuff. I think it's great to, you know, sometimes it is a little bit of a history lesson. Sometimes you go back and you see memories. You're like, oh yeah, I remember that point in time where I posted that thing and stuff. My use of social media over the past, well, history of it, other than MySpace. Can we all just go back to MySpace? Remember MySpace with Tom?
Dude, right?
He didn't ask anything of you.
You can have your own music on your
you
page.
Could. You could. Yeah, write a little code, a little wallpaper. Yeah. You always had him as a friend. He wasn't trying to sell you shit. He didn't do anything with your data, right? And we all took him for granted.
We just dated ourselves.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm okay with that. My being in law enforcement with a law enforcement background, I was governed by certain rules. And then I was also very aware of, I didn't ever want to get called in for something stupid that got posted involving me or I did myself on Facebook. What a dumb reason to be in trouble at work. I had plenty of ways to do that on my own. So I was always really careful about that. So my memories don't consist of a lot of stuff like that because I was probably pretty removed from that. But now, because I run a business and then run a nonprofit and some other than just a fun page with mountain biking stuff, I use social media as a creative outlet. I think number one, I'm trying to create things such as this podcast. I try to do some video stuff. I'm trying to like move myself into a creative space to have some artistic outlets that I don't have otherwise. And I'm trying to endeavor to be a little better in those spaces. So I like that. Number one, I do like what it offers creative types. And for learning, like quite honestly, if I can ride this Instagram wave that generally crashes down on me more often than not, you can actually learn some stuff via Instagram to some extent. I follow a lot of companies that I'm really interested in their products and stuff like that. I'm aware I'm being marketed to during that, but at the same time, I've also gained an awareness of mountain biking over the 2 years I've been involved in it that has helped me in that pursuit of it. Things like YouTube specifically, if you know that you're also being drug along this path, but you use it and go like, we want to build out our van. We have a Sprinter van. I want to build it myself. You can literally learn how to do that on there. I'm astounded at the amount of information that is available to you and a lot of it, very good information, video wise, creative wise. There's some creators there that just give away the farm on stuff that was always tightly regarded.
I want to ask you and whoever's listening to this podcast the question. Would you be willing to pay for said service to not be marketed to?
Ooh, that's a good one. So if I paid you $20 a month to use a platform that didn't try to sell me stuff while I was digesting videos on how to build vans or whatever people right. post, something like that. Yeah, I'd pay it.
Yeah, because I mean, that's the only way that I'm able to use YouTube is through the premium feature.
Well, like Netflix. Netflix does not have advertising on there.
No.
You paid it, but you can, I don't know how much of it's like actual educational per se. Maybe there's a side of it that I just haven't seen, but like, I appreciate that Netflix still doesn't have ads on it.
Yeah.
They produce good and bad, mediocre stuff for me to consume.
Because I would rather become the customer instead of the product.
Yeah.
Right. You know, kind of bring it all back around.
Yeah. Which is the premise of the social dilemma is that we are now the commodity.
Yeah.
They are not selling to us. We are the commodity that is up to the bidders that want to sell us stuff, but we are actually the commodity. And everybody needs to be very aware of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And they do a great job illustrating the fact that, you know, they're not, I mean, people are always concerned with their personal data.
Yeah.
But they make it very clear and it passed, you know, the litmus test of the fact that it's not in their best interest to sell your information.
Yeah.
Because that is their value proposition to their customer, which is, you know, corporations that are looking to advertise directly to people.
How scared of were we all when we thought the NSA was spying on us? The NSA listens to your phone conversations. And I'm like, first off, I don't say any shit that anybody on the NSA wants to even hear. So that'd be very boring if they were listening. But we all had that big fear. And yet in the user agreement of our phones, every time we get an update and we hit accept and you scroll through and you have to hit accept again, you are giving away more information than the government could ever hope to glean, ever. You ever wonder why your maps are so accurate on the times? It's because they know exactly where you are and where you're traveling and where 10,000 other people on that road are traveling at the exact same time. So it's not just a simple A to B transactional, like GPS, this, it could take you 2 hours to get here. You're like, it'll never take me 2 hours to get there. It's 4 hours this time of day. But when you punch it into your iPhone to get from A to B, it's like, it'll be 4 hours because all the other boneheads like you are traveling down there and we're looking at you in real time and can compute that. That doesn't seem nefarious, but we give that data away. Yep. Everything, more than any entity could ever hope to glean from you, you give it away like willingly. I'll tell you something I just did that's frightening on what could happen was I bought two products. Like one is a microscope. It's a Wi-Fi microscope to take pictures of very specific things. I'll just leave it there. And then another one is like a borescope where you can actually, it's a Wi-Fi. You can, it's a snake camera too. I have some little projects. It'll make sense someday. Don't worry about it. But you had to download the apps and they are like, this is not racist whatsoever. They are very Chinese apps, like very rudimentary, but they are very specifically from Chinese companies that say, download this and we want access to your pictures and we want this. And I've never been so apprehensive downloading apps onto my phone where I go, that shit's spying on me. Like I know it. There's like, they're spying on me to use this little microscope, like Wi-Fi camera on my phone. And I just did it and I'm probably a spy now. It was the biggest awakening that I've ever had of you just installed just massive spy stuff on your phone. But I did it anyways.
Well, yeah, because we want that convenience.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I want to use this shiny object, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, and then that's a whole nother conversation, right? Of, you know, civil liberties and the things that we're doing that undermine that.
Yeah.
To be able to get what we want and immediate gratification, not considering the long-term consequences and lack of privacy and how that's being used against us.
Yeah. I to just wrap up on your question, would I pay for a platform that I didn't get sold to? I don't know. Like, I think it would have to be broad-based user thing too, because I downloaded Parler when that started coming out, you know, like everybody was pushing back against it. And to go into our future conversation of echo chamber, like confirmation bias stuff, it would seem to be heavily driven by one viewpoint. And I didn't want to be part of a platform that was just giving me one thing, whether there's ads on there, they're still claiming they're not going to sell our data yet. Like all of that stuff. I at some point I looked at that and went that it wasn't broad-based enough for me to continue to be a part of. So
we'll say like use Instagram.
Yeah.
Would you pay $25 a month to use Instagram to not be advertised to?
Yeah. From a business perspective, I know the direct value to my businesses for Instagram and Facebook when I choose to use them. I can directly correlate that to, I have made sales on it. And I would do that if probably a topic for down the road, but what is marketing? Is it, I'm going to get an ad, or is it me doing media for the local bike shop where I'm marketing to people by not marketing? We're posting stuff on their page. I'm running their account for them. We post stuff on their page to simply draw interaction there. But it seems as though we're part of a social network. But make no mistake, we're spending that time to get people to come in the shop.
Well, so it's, and that's the hard part.
It's guerrilla marketing.
Well, those companies can't completely switch to a subscription based product.
Right.
But to be able to offer that to retain users that they otherwise would lose. Right. Right? I think there's a lot of people that are, you know, such as myself, seriously weighing the pros and cons of the interaction with social media and whether or not to continue to participate in it. Right. Yeah. Right now, the only reason I haven't fully separated myself from it is the fact that to promote and share this podcast, mm-hmm. it requires me to have social media accounts.
Yeah.
And the same thing with the business. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, other than that, I'd be okay with walking away from the rest. And I would hope that I would be able, through text message, email, and phone calls, maintain those relationships with those people that I otherwise don't normally see.
Right.
But then, you know, there's a lot of people that wouldn't, and they're happy to give up their privacy. They're happy to give up the information and be marketed to. And so, I mean, that's the difficult part. And it's, what side of the pendulum do you want to be on? Mm-hmm. Right. And at what point are we as a collective society going to hold these companies responsible for the less than desirable results of what their actions are in these case studies that they're running?
I don't know, man. part of a bigger ongoing conversation I think we'll have with things to come. You know, I think as we continue to explore this platform and other things we hope to do with the channel and with this thing that we're hopefully going to start creating, this movement behind Remedy, I think it's a good starting point for us to look at that. So I think we should wrap it up on that. I think we've covered a lot of territory here. Hopefully everybody kind of understood where our flow was on here about like what social media is, what it's not, what it's doing to us, what cost there is, and then some of the value, some of the things that you can weigh those costs out and go, it doesn't make sense for me as a business person, as a, just a regular person, like, do I want to pay the price for that? And I think we had a pretty good conversation on that. So till next time. Yeah, we're going to leave it at that.
Yeah. The only thing I'd like to add at the end here is just the fact that please don't be disappointed that there's not a specific closing point or takeaway from these conversations.
Yeah.
I don't think it's our interest to tell you what to think.
Right.
It's to invoke the exercise of developing greater critical thinking skills and consider things in a way that you hadn't previously. So, you know, at the end of these podcasts, you're never going to get the, and make sure you do this.
Yeah.
You know, it's
make sure you buy Quaker Oats.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Don't kid yourself. When we get sponsors, man, we're going to be heavily telling like, yeah, you need
we'll,
to.
We'll be upfront about it.
Like, yeah.
Hey, by the way, before you listen to this podcast, you need to buy this.
I do think the ShamWow is the best thing on the planet. Absolutely. So, and if you want to use our coupon code for it, you can get 10% off the ShamWow 7,000.
Yep. And if you refer five people and then we get 5-star reviews, you get a slap chop.
Ooh, the slap chop. Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I think this is a debate style forum. And as we have people on in the future too, we may have some opposing viewpoints to it. Corey and I are fairly closely aligned in viewpoints and stuff. And he does everything I say, and that's kind of the way it needs to be. But we may have some people on here that are contrary to that, because I think a debate style format lends itself more towards where we need to go moving forward, instead of just consume our stuff because we're going to tell you the way it is. And to be blunt, you know, like to push back against the TikTok experts and stuff, Corey and I are not experts in probably about anything. You might be in paint films, but and me, not much. So for us, we're just two guys trying to make sense of this crazy world and talk things out and debate things and see where it goes.
Yeah, we'd love to get your feedback on how you found productive ways to navigate, you know, the use of social media, or if you found yourself, you know, falling victim to, you know, the difficulties or the adversities and your own personal interaction with social media. So you can reach out to us.
Yeah.
Remedy a Human Awakening podcast on Instagram or on Facebook as well. Uh-huh. And if you don't want to use social media to reach out to us, you can email us at info@remedypodcast.com.
Bam. Is there a place anybody could actually send us a letter should they choose to handwrite it? Or are we just more past that point?
Yeah, we're past that point.
Okay. Sorry, guys. Sorry. Yeah. You can't lick a stamp and send it to us.
Well, it's Corona, a carrier pigeon. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't want stamps on envelopes anyways. All right. We're just getting silly now.
Yep.
Thank you. We'll see you next time.